will join us.
After the war, I went back to New York.
Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Salek, Phyllis Myers, Roberta Shurrock, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, John Sheehan, Heidi Simon, and Mooj Zadie. Teresa Madden directed today's show. I'm Terry Gross.
And the man is non-stop.
Gentlemen of the jury, I'm curious, bear with me. Are you aware that we're making history? This is the first murder trial of our brand new nation, the liberty behind the liberation. I intend to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt with my assistant counsel.
Co-counsel Hamilton, sit down. A client every week's his innocence. Call your first witness. That's all you had to say.
Okay, one more thing.
Why do you...
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from GNC, global provider of nutritional supplements committed to helping customers improve their quality of life. More than 4,000 of its stores will reopen this month with new products and programs. Learn more at #OneNewGNC. And from Staples, with copy and print solutions for business, including color copies and presentations, booklets and manuals, and custom holiday cards and invitations. More at Staples stores or staples.com. Staples, make more happen.
New parents planning a return to work after a baby's arrival often realize that finding childcare is not easy.
Our first few interviews, we were asking a lot of questions and we're really trying to get a feel for the place. And by place number 10 and 11, our only question was, do you have a spot?
I'm Audie Cornish. The consequences of childcare scarcity later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, This American Land explores the military's role in protecting valued landscapes. Native Report is next at 8:30 and Celebration 2016 at 9. At 10, On Thin Ice, the People of the North documents how subpolar communities are addressing changes in their lives brought about by the warming and opening of the Arctic. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org. Follow 360 North on Facebook and Twitter.
Welcome to a Juno afternoon on Tuesday, January 3rd, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll get an update on library activities with MJ Grandy. Colleen Hudson and Melissa Dumas will tell us about the Gold Creek Tot Rave. Police Chief Bryce Johnson will be here with our monthly JPD check-in. We'll learn about a fundraiser for the Shrine of St. Therese. And we'll get a preview of Wednesday's Mudrooms storytelling event. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juneau afternoon. Currently 25 degrees at the Juneau Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The state of Alaska's first joint jurisdiction court has accepted a participant and will soon take additional cases. The Kenaisi Indian Tribe in Kenai is partnering with the state to provide better support for community members, both Native and non-Native, struggling with substance abuse and the legal system. Daisha Eaton has more.
The state and the tribe signed documents to form the court this fall, but it's been in the works for years. Kenaisi Indian Tribe elder and tribal council member Licia Blizzard says some of her earliest community memories are of substance abuse.
To this day, it's difficult to talk about because there was so much alcoholism here, a lot of domestic violence and suicide.
Blizzard says families were torn apart as courts sent tribal children out of state to foster homes where they lost touch with their families, culture, and language. The tribe started their own court in the mid-80s. Since then, in an effort to keep families together and culturally connected, the court has handled civil China cases, or child in need of aid, custody disputes, guardianship, and conservatorship for elders and vulnerable adults, some domestic violence petitions, as well as marriages and divorces. The new court will add criminal misdemeanors. Blizzard says one of its first challenges will be one that has blindsided the community, heroin.
In this community, heroin is the drug of choice because it is cheap.
Kimberly Sweet, chief judge for the Kenaitse Tribal Court, says the situation is having a serious impact on families.
99% of our children in need of aid cases come in and there is a drug and alcohol component to either the neglect or the abuse that's taken place. The state court was seeing the same things.
Alaska Superior Court Judge Anna Moran, who will partner with Tribal Judge Sweet during proceedings, says the state and tribe hope the court can turn things around.
For every child who has their mother or father taken away and put in jail, that child gets in the system or is in foster care, and that ripples out to their children. We really want to try to stop that.
If participants fail out of the therapeutic court program, they'll have to go back to state criminal court to face the full weight of state law. In Kenai, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Demonstrators opposing the Dakota Access Pipeline marched at the end of the Rose Parade in Pasadena, California, Monday. People carried a float with a teepee and a water is sacred sign. Those marching alongside also held signs, while others carried a long black handmade pipeline, which had messages written on it, including water is life and clean energy now. The action at the Rose Parade was followed by the public display of a large No Dakota Access Pipeline banner, which a couple people unveiled from rafters during a Minnesota Vikings game Sunday. Three people were arrested for that incident at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis and released from jail on Monday. American University, Washington, D.C., has announced it will remove a statue of Leonard Peltier. The 9-foot wooden piece, which sits outside the university's museum and art center, has sparked controversy since it went up last month, including by law enforcement groups issuing complaints. Peltier is serving 2 consecutive life sentences for the murders of 2 FBI agents on the Pine Ridge Reservation in the 1970s. A statement by the university says it has hosted a number of exhibits of political and controversial art, but says the subject matter and placement of this piece improperly suggests American University has assumed an advocacy position of clemency for Peltier when no such position has been taken. Meanwhile, attorneys and supporters of Peltier are hoping President Obama will issue clemency for the activist during the president's final days in office. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on January 3rd, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the top of the hour, and joining me now in the studio is MJ Grandy. She is the Youth Services Librarian for the Juneau Public Library. Welcome to the show, MJ.
Thanks, Scott. It's great to be here. Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too. And you are busy this week already.
We are busy this week already. We noticed that the school district calendar had a really interesting configuration for the winter holidays this year. So we are starting right back up this week with programming for kids.
Because they're still out of school.
Because they're still out of school. The presents might have all been opened. You might have read all the books you received as gifts. So you might need to be coming to the library to stock up on what's next.
Okay. So what's going on this week?
Well, we're starting out tomorrow at the Downtown Library with our story times. They're back at 11 o'clock. Tomorrow, the Downtown Library, Thursday at 11 at Douglas, and Friday at 11 at the Valley. So whether you're home with your kids because they're not in school, or maybe there's a grandparent watching the children, or a friend or a neighbor, we just wanted to make sure everybody knew about those ongoing programs at the library.
Set the scene for our listeners. What do these story times look like? What ages go?
The 11 o'clock show is targeted at the preschool set, kind of the 3 to 5, maybe able to sit down for a little longer of a story. There will be finger plays, songs. We really work to build a community at each little program. So there's always a welcoming song and an ending song and wrap it all up. And it's really for having fun introducing love of literature. It's not about sitting still. We know that that's not really the developmental stage of those kids. So it's about coming and having fun and having the library be a stimulating and engaging place.
Okay, so that's at 11 a.m.?
That's at 11 a.m.
Which library is in when again?
Wednesday downtown, Thursday Douglas, Friday at the Valley. And then also Friday, again, because it is a school in service, we try to have our Science Friday events held during school in services. And those are targeted the 7 and up kids. So this will be the science of ice and snow, and we're so happy we are having both of those this year. We're going to have our guest, Rich Manson from DIPAC. He's going to come, and we're going to grow snowflakes. We're going to examine the crystalline structures of ice and snow, make kaleidoscopes, and, of course, the most fun thing, transform milk products with dry ice into ice cream. So we're going to be having all sorts of hands-on experiments and then also the logical parts of the science of freezing.
Okay, so that's Friday at
the Valley Library? That's Friday at the Valley Library, yes, okay. From 1 until 3 p.m.
All right, that sounds like fun. And that's, you said, ages 7 and up.
Yep. And as always, we have our target groups, but we know that kids come in families, so the family is always welcome, and kids on either one side or the other. Also, First Friday, I'm here also representing the City Museum, and it's already First Friday. It went around really, really fast. So they have 3 new exhibits that they're launching this week. There's the North Douglas Highway mailboxes, which are photographs by Paul Corvez. And I'm waiting to see if my mailbox has made that gallery. I don't quite think so, but I'm going to go look.
That's interesting. So and correct me if I'm wrong, did he interview you as well as take the picture?
I wasn't chosen, I didn't get an interview.
Got it. Okay.
I believe that there are narratives to go with them.
Yeah.
So that's a wait and see, though.
Okay, thanks.
And then there's A Braided Way, which will be a mixing of poetry. Alaria Jensen and Jonas Lamb have collaborated on that piece. They're focusing on poetry, parenting, and place. And again, not exactly sure what that's going to look like. And I apologize because I do not speak Tlingit, so I will only speak the English translation. It's the Glowing Valley, and those are paintings, photographs, and objects relating to Mount Juno. I apologize. I'm not even going to try. So those are the exciting things going on at the museum at the beginning of the month. And then they are having a coffee and collections this month also on Saturday the 21st. And that will be Fumi Matsumoto, who's going to they're going to show the film Honor and Sacrifice, which is the story of her father, Roy Matsumoto, who was in the Japanese internment camp during World War II. And she'll discuss her artwork, which came out of her life experience, definitely influenced by her father and the other members of the family's experiences.
All right, a lot going on. Where can people see the schedule you're looking
at? This is all at juno.org/library. Click on calendar, and there is up at the top right, it says printed calendar. You can find it there.
Sounds like
fun. Do I got one more minute?
Yeah.
Yes, so then next week, Tuesday, on January 10th, we're starting, there's going to be a science-related book club going on through this late winter, early spring. The first one, the club is called Pushing the Limits, and so this month is going to be the book Cod by Mark Kurlansky. We've got extra copies at the library. We know people are trying to read ahead. And then our the person who's going to be leading the discussion will be the guest, Ellen Carley, who's a conservator at the State Museum, and I'm so looking forward to seeing how she ties together history of fishing, perhaps cod, and her curation efforts at the museum with the book.
And when is that discussion?
And that is Tuesday at the Douglas Library, Tuesday the 10th at the Douglas Library at 5:30.
And the idea is that people have read this book already.
It's usually helpful to attend a book discussion having read the book.
And how does one get involved with this club?
Show up.
To show up.
Yep, this is a brand new group. I think there are people who are looking for book clubs. This is a way of we're kind of facilitating who's looking and maybe finding book clubs to grow out of this dialogue.
Okay, so if somebody's not involved, maybe this is a good one to get your feet wet, go and figure out what's going to be the next book.
Exactly. Well, the books are all published. I have the whole list of them are, again, it's on the rotating screen at the library, either on the webpage or in the physical libraries.
All right. A lot going on.
A lot going on.
Did we miss anything?
I don't think so. The ongoing programs, there's Cuentacuentos Infantil, which is a Spanish language story time. That's Monday nights. Wasn't yesterday since that was a holiday, but it'll be back at the Valley Library. That's every Monday at 5:30 at the Valley Library. As always, we have the Tlingit Language Learners Group that meets also on Monday at the Downtown Libraries at 6 o'clock. And I think that's most of what I have going on the calendar downtown.
All right. MJ Grandy, Youth Services Librarian for the Juneau Public Libraries. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. Take care.
Drawn to that sort of library magic, whispering through the dusty aisle, watching all the thinkers read, trying to keep a grown man quiet, like pulling teeth on a winter's eve. Cracks and poles in unfamiliar roads, I'm on this one to find out. Educators and brothers to rest, can't stay up in the cloud of ice. Listening to my every move, just trying to survive. Self-imposed adventure that selfishness drives. I can barely keep my head above the blue, trying to keep it off me and you. But I can see the sunshine's rays gleaming through the clear water, telling me that I've been for this chapter's read. There will always be better days. There will always be better days. Making music is what we do, trying to weave the patterns for me and you, trying to make the grasses breathe and a grown man cry. Truth in life is where I glean, tangled up in a funnel's wind, trying to come out walking, understand it's beyond me talking, trying to come out walking, understand it's beyond me talking. I can see the sunshine's rays gleaming through the clear water, telling me that I've been for this chapter's read. There will always be better days. There will always be better days. Being alone is lonely, sought after like a holiday. Being home is my vacation, postcard dreams of a full-size bed. With the band once a minute time, serious enough to get a ride. Heal up in the next morning for another drive. That's a promise, the best advice we ever received is for you and me today together. It's easy to begin and hard to end. I'm just glad to go through it all with you as a friend. I can see the sunshine's rays gleaming through the clear water, telling me you got a hopping for this chapter's right. There will always be better days. There will always be better days. There will always be better days.
Support comes from GCI Internet Services. GCI offers internet packages that include technical support 365 days a year. GCI, serving Juneau downtown on Seward Street and in the Valley.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 3rd of January, 2017. It's the birthday of the writer who created Bilbo, Gandalf, Gollum, Frodo, introduced readers to a place called Middle-earth and a magical ring. J.R.R. Tolkien, born 1892 in South Africa, creator of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, came out in 1955. Family moved to England when he was just 4 years old. He loved the English countryside. He was reading by the age of four, starting to learn Latin, developed a love for Arthurian legends. Went off to World War I, fought with the Lancashire Fusiliers, was wounded in action, became a professor of languages and literature at Oxford, where he took 17 years to write his three books. He wrote them with two fingers on a typewriter, Lord of the Rings. Tolkien, who said readers read too much into his books, he said, "I don't like allegories. I never liked Hans Christian Andersen because I knew he was always getting at me." He said about his hobbits, "There is little or no magic about them except the ordinary everyday sort, which helps them to disappear quietly and quickly when large, stupid folk like you and me come blundering along, making a noise like elephants, which they can hear a mile off. They are inclined to be fat in the stomach. They dress in bright colors, chiefly green and yellow, wear no shoes because their feet grow natural leathery soles and thick, warm brown hair like the stuff on their heads, which is curly. They have long, clever brown fingers, good-natured faces, and laugh deep, fruity laughs, especially after dinner, which they have twice a day when they can get it." Here's a poem by Ann Porter entitled Music. "When I was a child, I once sat sobbing on the floor beside my mother's piano as she played and sang, for there was in her singing a shy yet solemn glory my smallness could not hold, and when I was asked why I was crying, I had no words for it, I only shook my head and went on crying. Why is it that music at its most beautiful opens a wound in us, an ache, a desolation, deep as a homesickness for some far-off and half-forgotten country? I've never understood why this is so, but there's an ancient legend from the other side of the world that gives away the secret of this mysterious sorrow. For centuries on centuries we have been wandering, but we were made for paradise, as deer for the forest, and when music comes to us with its heavenly beauty, it brings us desolation, for when we hear it, we half remember that lost native country. We dimly remember the fields, their fragrant wind-swept clover, the bird songs in the orchards, the wild white violets in the moss by the transparent streams, and shining at the heart of it is the longed-for beauty of the one who waits for us, who will always wait for us in those radiant meadows, yet also came to live with us and wanders where we wander." Music, a poem by Ann Porter, from Living Things, published by Zoland Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity with a 10-minute fit test to calculate baseline scores, training programs with 50 challenging brain games. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. Pick
click Give. A great and easy way to support nonprofits in Alaska. You simply donate during your PFD application process. There are dozens of nonprofits that you can support in Juneau alone, including KTOO Public Media. The application period for the PFD begins January 1st and runs through March 31st. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
You're listening to Ed Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, January 3rd, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, and joining me now in the studio is Joe Sainard. He's the director of the Shrine of St. Therese. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Good afternoon, Scott. Thank you for having me.
It's nice to have you here. So you have a fundraiser coming up, is that right?
Yeah, we do.
When is that?
That it's going to be February 3rd at 6 o'clock in the evening. That's a Friday night. We're having it across the street here at the Jack. So it should be a great time. We have a Mardi Gras theme going on. So we're going to have some great food, Cajun food, king cake, you name it. We're going to have it. It should be a great time.
I bet. Let's come back to that in a minute. You're the director of the Shrine. What does that mean? What do you do out there?
Well, that's a good question. I do everything from weed eating to trying to find the money to keep the place going. But it's a beautiful, beautiful place that's been, you know, 80 years in the making, and the vision of that place came from St. Therese and her simple way, and it's really a wonderful thing for us to be able to steward that here in a world that's as crazy and fast going as this. To say, looking at things in a simple way might be something we can all learn something from. But, you know, the Shrine's such a spectacular place, no matter where you are. It's just or where you're from. You go there and you get a sense of just the beauty of nature. And if you're religious in any way, then you've got also the spiritual aspect of it. So we just kind of work those two together so that people, whether they're believers or not, can really have that experience that you can most everybody that goes there has.
Sure. You know, I'll bet a lot of our listeners have been to the Shrine in one way or another, but describe for us all that the Shrine has to offer.
Sure. The Shrine, obviously, it's just a beautiful park-like area right there on the ocean. And but what we have is some accommodations for people that are trying to get away, to spend time with their families, to spend time in reflection, and just to, you know, come to a better awareness of self and of their relationship with God. But over the past 80 years, the place has grown, and about 20 years ago, we put together a strategic plan for that area. And out there, there's a shrine, there's a walkway out one way, the Rosary Trail, and then there's other trails around, and there's different buildings. Well, all those are part of that strategic plan that was put together in the late 90s. And one of the things we're working on, which is part of this fundraiser we're doing, is the retreat center. We don't have like a per se retreat center, although most shrines do. In October of this past year, 2016, the National Catholic Conference of Bishops designated the Shrine a national shrine, which is a big deal to us. It just says, you know, what this shrine is to not only the people in Juneau, who everybody in Juneau feels like, you know, it's their shrine, and it is. It's not just the Catholic churches. We're stewards, but it's everybody's shrine. It's everybody's place. But to have the bishops recognize that and as a national shrine, that's really powerful for us. And we're really looking forward to expanding our spiritual outreach in our retreats by having this retreat center developed on the property. The place where that retreat center is going to be has been, that land has been prepared back in 2000. So it's going right on a bench that's there and prepared. The water service, the electrical service is right there. The parking lot is there. So it should fit right in, and people should just not even, it's going to be like the other things that are there. It should just fit in there like it belonged the whole time.
You are stewards, the Catholic Church is stewards of the Shrine, but it's open to all faiths and belief
systems,
right? Absolutely,
absolutely. And many people that come out there, most of them are non-Catholics. And the benefactors of the place are many, many non-Catholics, just people who really take it, their neighbors, their friends, and they care about the Shrine. And we are so grateful to have that kind of help.
Okay. And so this fundraiser, which is on February 3rd, across the street here at the Jack, is mostly for this retreat center, you're saying?
Yeah. Okay. Yes, it is. It's specifically earmarked for that, to help us work on that. We're in the conceptual stages of that. You know, we have a new bishop. We don't have a new bishop. Our bishop is leaving. So we still can do a little bit of the work in the conceptual areas, but we won't put, a shovel to the ground till we get the next bishop. But it gives us some time to do that. The conceptual designs, we hope to have those done in the next 3 or 4 months. So this will help us figure all that out so we can start the development when the new bishop gets here.
Okay. So did you say that was a Friday night, February
3rd? Yes, sir. It's okay. Friday night, 6 o'clock.
At the Jack. And what can people expect that night?
Just a great time, good camaraderie. We'll have a little bit of wine, a little bit of beer, a great time to just meet everybody and talk about something everybody here loves, and that's the Shrine.
Okay. And so are you going to be asking people for ideas for plans, or is this mostly just a fundraiser?
It's pretty much a fundraiser at this point. And we're going to have, like I said, there'll be a call auction, which people have donated, like Maria and Carl Yucatil are going to do a pig roast as one of the auction items. And then we've got other people that have donated beautiful items, and we've got a little, a bunch of items. If anybody has anything they want to donate, we're sure to welcome that. I'll be happy to come and pick it up, or you can call me at 586-2227. Extension 24. I'm there waiting for you.
Aside from attending this fundraiser and contributing financially, do you guys need volunteers out there?
We always welcome volunteers. We have so many volunteers to take care of the gardens out there and the work that's out there. Everything from picking the heads off plants to helping us weed. Absolutely. This time of year, there's not a lot, but they could certainly help. And we always keep people's names. And then we have work cleanup days, usually once a month during the summertime, where we have people come out and help us keep the grounds up.
Okay. All right. So this fundraiser is in 1 month.
Yes, sir. 1 month from today.
I wonder if you should maybe come back on the show and remind us as we
get
closer.
I'd love to do that. Okay. I'd love to remind you.
And it's at 6 p.m. at the Jack. It's a Friday night. And then auction and music and...
And Cajun food.
All right.
Mardi Gras.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes.
Give me the... If somebody wants to contact you, what's the best way to do that?
My phone number is 586-2227, extension 24. Or you can email me at junoshrine@dioceseofjuno.org.
Okay. Joe Sainard, he's the director of the Shrine. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Anything we're missing? Anything else you want to add?
Well, I just want to appreciate, Scott, the time that you've given us, and also the people all through the Juneau area, the community that supports the Shrine all throughout the year and ever since it came here. So we're just very grateful to be part of it. Thank you.
Hey, right, thank you, Joe.
This is Bird Note. You've heard the term jaywalking. Any idea where it comes from? Traffic signals and jaybirds wouldn't seem to have much in common. Well, the term jaywalking originated back in 1917. Cars had recently become common on the streets of Boston, and for the first time, the act of stepping out into traffic posed a problem. In those days, jaywalkers would encounter Model Ts tooling along at the breakneck speed of 20 miles per hour. The term jay was then slang for a hick, a rube, or a country bumpkin. Sophisticated city dwellers with little tolerance for rural folk coined the term jaywalker to describe someone green to the ways of the city and to modern traffic signals. But why jay? Anyone who's observed the eastern blue jay or the Steller's jay of the west would describe them as noisy, bold, brash, and impudent. So, those sophisticated Bostonians might have combined the foolish country bumpkin term and the sometimes obnoxious nature of jay behavior when they coined the term jaywalking. Who knows for sure? If you do, come join the conversation on our Facebook page or our website, birdnote.org. The bird sounds for Bird Note are from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. I'm Mary McCann.
Study on your time, on your terms. Business, accounting, and management classes at the University of Alaska Southeast are completely web-based with no scheduled meeting times. Get the education you want without putting life on hold. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu/SOM or call 796-6409 to speak with an advisor about spring 2017 registration.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, January 3rd, 2017. With me in the studio now is Kate Higgins and Melissa Dumas. They're here to tell us about the Gold Creek Tot Rave. Melissa, what is a tot rave?
Well, this is a dance for children geared to ages two to six. I think even my eight-year-old will have fun at it, though. And we have a DJ, and we'll have party lights and glow sticks, and it should be a good time. This is our fifth annual.
Yeah, it's a thing, right? I've heard it's really fun for kids.
In the past, we've done it at the DIPAC, but this year we're going to do it at the Jack. So it's a bigger venue, should be more space. I hope people like that.
Yes, that's this Saturday, right?
This Saturday, the 7th, from 4 to 7 at the Jack.
Okay, and this is a fundraiser for the Gold Creek Child Development Center. You're in the federal building, right?
Yes.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the Child Development Center.
It's a great daycare center that both Melissa and I have had our children go through.
We've been open for 20 years.
Wow.
And there's about 60
families?
60 families in the center. We have four different classrooms and lots of kids.
Yeah, I bet. So the four different classrooms, what are the age breakdowns?
Infants, toddlers, preschool, and pre-kindergarten.
Yeah. So. And so you say 60 families, about how many kids?
I guess probably 60 kids.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
See?
There's lots of families that have multiple kids.
Got it.
Not lots, but there are. We both did at one point.
Yep.
But, yeah, and I think we have openings in pre-K and preschool right now if anybody's looking for childcare.
And what's the upper age limit?
That's 3 to 5.
3 to 5.
Yeah.
What are 3 to 5-year-olds into these days?
Legos and block building, singing songs. We have we also have a playground that's, you know, like a private playground. That's kind of nice, I think. We also have served breakfast, lunch, and snacks, which is a big plus.
What time do the kids usually get there and leave? Is it different for different ages? Or?
We open at 7, which is like the earliest, I think, probably for a center. And then
until
we close 5:30. At 5:30.
Okay, and kids sort of come in and out throughout the day, depending on their parents' schedules. Okay, and so this, is it a nonprofit?
Yes.
It is, okay. So definitely need as much financial support as possible, like other nonprofits here in town. So tell us a little bit more about it. It's this Saturday. It starts at what time, and what can the kids expect?
It starts at 4 o'clock.
And goes till 7? Free glow sticks for the kiddos. Everybody loves a glow stick.
Okay.
And there's going to be food available for purchase. And I think that this year we're going to have some new activities, right, Melissa?
Yeah, we're going to set up a limbo. I think that'll be really fun. And I think a ring toss. And then we have Janice Hurley. She teaches dance in town. She's going to come and lead a couple of big group dances, which we've done in the past. She'll teach, like, the electric slide and the chicken dance and the hokey pokey.
Wow.
And getting a bunch of toddlers in there doing that is usually pretty cute.
I bet. For a parent who has not taken their kid to this before, how can they prepare their kids, would you say? What should they bring, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, nothing. You just, your diaper bag or whatever. I usually, you know, I've brought my kids, and I bring a babysitter because I'm working while there so they can watch them, but... And of course, you're responsible for your kids. And we only have, we do have Gretchen sitting at the door, and you're supposed to have a child if you come. And of course, children have to be accompanied by a parent. It's not a drop-off situation. But we give out numbers so that
we can keep track.
We can keep track, and people won't go home with the wrong kids or whatever.
Okay. That's this Saturday from 4 to 7?
Yes.
At the Jack. Support the Gold Creek Child Development Center. Thanks for coming on the show, Kate and Melissa. Anything else that you want to add?
Nope, just come down and do some dancing.
Great. Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
COO is about 5 months out from having the honor of hosting David Sedaris in Juneau, and less than 200 tickets remain. If you're hoping to join us on May 14th, we encourage you to go to ktoo.org or the Jack to purchase your seats. Again, that's David Sedaris in Juneau this May 14th, brought to you by KTOO with sponsorship support from COPA.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, January 3rd, 2017. It's about 15 minutes until the top of the hour. We have a little extra time on the show today. And in preparation for Wednesday's Mudrooms, let's listen to an archive story. Here is Governor Bill Walker from the April 2016 Mudrooms event.
Governor Bill Walker was born in Fairbanks and raised in Delta Junction in Valdez. His parents, Ed and Frances Walker, were Alaskan pioneers. As a family, the Walkers celebrated Alaska statehood in 1959, survived the 1964 earthquake, and worked together in the family construction and hotel businesses. Prior to taking office, Governor Walker and his wife Donna owned a law firm that focused on municipal and oil and gas law. Married since 1977, the Walkers have 4 children and 4 grandchildren. Governor Walker is an avid downhill skier, enjoys fishing, boating, snow machining, campfires with the family at the lake, and taking the grandkids ice skating. Please welcome Governor Bill Walker.
Well, what an honor it is to tell my story. To set the story up, I have to talk a little bit about growing up in Valdez, the importance of basketball to a kid who wanted to get out of town. You did not get out of town unless you made the team. So you had to be on the team to get out of town. So it also involves Marty Rutherford. I don't know if anybody here knows Marty Rutherford, but she's the acting commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. So life goes on in Valdez. There's no radio. There's no TV. There's no bowling alley. There's no theater. You've got basketball. That's all you got. So we won in... when I was a senior, we won a regional tournament, which meant that if we won the regional tournament, the playoff tournament was in Unalakleet. We had to travel to Unalakleet to play in the championship tournament. So we won the regionals in Kenai. We came back to Valdez excited about that. We went to the school board and said, we need some money to go on this trip. They said, no, we don't have any money. Go to the city council. So in the city council meeting, you know, I guess now they like celebrate when you win a tournament, and then in the 60s they didn't. We went in and we said, we need $700 to be able to fly to Unalakleet to play in the tournament. And I'll never forget this. He said, well, you should have thought of that before you won the regional tournament. Who does that anymore? But anyway, I remember that so well. So Marty was the head cheerleader. I was on the basketball team. So we went out and raised money. We got enough money to go to Unalakleet to play in the tournament. Now, it was just us and Unalakleet. We lost the tournament. Now, I don't actually know why I told that whole part of the story, because if you don't tell a story, you usually lost. But anyway, that was just how important basketball was to us. So off we graduated from high school. Off we go to college. We come back after our first semester. And I tell you, there's no one smarter than a college student with one semester halfway through. It just doesn't get any better than that. So Marty and I came back to Valdez, and we got there before anybody else of any of our group that are our classmates. And there was a regional tournament in Delta Junction in like, it must have been like December 20th or so. So I said, hey Marty, let's go to that tournament. It kind of like relive the old times, you know, as far as going up to Delta. And Delta, for those who know, is 256 miles north of Valdez. It was about 40 below in Delta, so we had to figure out how to borrow somebody's car. You know, in those days, I mean, there wasn't a matter of a two-car family. It was a big deal if it was a one-car family, much less a two-car. So getting a car was a little challenging. I asked my folks if I could borrow the only car they had, and they said, no, that wouldn't be happening. She asked the same thing of her dad, and her dad said, John Kelsey. I don't know who John Kelsey is, but great guy. He said, no, but I'll drive you up there. I said, oh, no, we're not going to have, no, Marty, we're not going to have your dad drive us to Delta. I'm not going to do that. So we finally found a friend of ours whose folks would let him use the car. So his car is the family station wagon, pretty old. His name was Willie Schmidt. He said, well, we can all drive up there. So we did, Willie Schmidt, Marty Rutherford, and myself. And as we're going along in this car, it was a station wagon, it was an early vintage station wagon, things started not working so well as we got into the colder weather. You get past Glen Allen, you know, Paxson, you get up, it's a little bit colder. So we got to Delta, and we seemed to be losing parts of the transmission on the way. So we got to Delta, we went to the game, it was just great. We, you know, it's like old times, and knew a lot of the people were there. And we came out and started up the car, and it only had one gear left, and it was reverse. So we backed over to where we were staying, some friend's house, and Marty said, well, I need to call my dad, and he'll come get us. I said, no, Marty, don't call your dad. I don't want to listen to I Told You So for 256 miles from your dad. So I said, here's the plan. We're driving. We're going to go to Valdez tomorrow. We're going to drive. So the next morning, or about mid-morning, when it finally became daylight in Delta, it was 45 below. We backed out of Delta, heading down the Richardson Highway. And you could stick your head out the window for about 10 minutes and backing up. And then, so we would rotate. Each of us would drive for 10 minutes. We'd rotate around. And I thought, well, I think we're going to do this. I mean, we got some very strange looks from a lot of drivers on the highways. Like, what are these guys doing? Like, we can do this, Marty. We can do it. You know, I always like to challenge, and I sure have one now. But I've always liked to challenge. And so we make it about halfway to Paxson. And all of a sudden, we lost out all important gear, reverse. So we didn't have to pull over the side of the road because that's where we were driving anyway. We just stopped and, man, now what are we going to do? And we'd never hitchhiked before. I mean, you grow up in Valdez, you just don't ever hitchhike. And so we got out, and it was the middle of the day, bright daylight. And so we just figured the next car that came by would stop. And so along came a car and just went right past us. But, I said, well, one of us better get out. I said, Marty, you get out. You get out. She was the only girl. They'll stop her, girl. There's no problem. Next car came by, went right past us again. Like, what the heck is this? And so then we started hitchhiking and trying to get a ride to Paxson. And I'll never forget this. This car went by, and I'm getting out in the trap. I figure maybe if there's more people there, maybe they'll stop. So I get out there, and the car went by, and Marty was so livid. She was so angry. I'll never forget what she said. She just turned and screamed. I won't say exactly what she said. I'll paraphrase what she said. She just was standing in the middle of that road and just screamed out, and she said, hey, you better stop. We might be somebody someday. And I looked at her, and I said, why would you say that? Remember, we had already gone through one semester of college. So we were right up there. I said, why would you say that? She said, I don't know. It just seemed like something the right thing to say. So anyway, we've been friends ever since. And now she's the acting commissioner of DNR, and we have a great time together. And she hates it. She hates it when I tell that story. So I tell it as often as I can. Thank you.
In Alaska, the economy is changing.
We are not generating enough revenue to pay our daily bills.
The energy industry is changing, and so is the landscape.
You know, you appreciate things as they become diminished in your life, right? I mean, you look at them differently when they are disappearing.
Alaska's Energy Desk is following those changes from the state capital to the North Slope to the Kenai and then Alaska. Follow us on your local public radio station.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon, and we just heard a story from Governor Bill Walker from the April edition of Mudrooms. The next Mudroom storytelling event is tomorrow, Wednesday, at 7 p.m. at Northern Light United Church. $7, 7 stories, 7 minutes each. It's a great way to learn about your fellow community members. And the theme for tomorrow night is Letting Go. New year, new stuff, and music will be provided by Carl Reese. Again, that's 7 p.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, at the Northern Light United Church.
Just
program support comes from Pucker Wilson's, a locally owned burger joint, home of the Husky Dawson and hand-cut three-way fries, proudly serving the Juneau community year-round. Daily menu items at facebook.com/puckerwilsons.
From the production team that brought you Five Lesbians Eating a Quiche comes Women Playing Hamlet, January 6th, 7th, and 8th, 7 p.m. at McTheaters Hall. It's a modern comedy about an old Shakespearean tragedy with an all-female cast playing multiple roles. Tickets available at Hearthside Books, The Jack, or online at jahc.org. Women Playing Hamlet, January 6th through the 8th at McTheaters Hall, presented by Juno Douglas Little Theater.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's about 2 minutes until the top of the hour. Tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, we'll find out about Women Playing Hamlet. Helva Bontrager and Mike Truax will be here to highlight this Saturday's Gold Street Music Jamboree. We'll get a preview of this month's Wildlife Wednesday presentation on tree swallows with guest birder Brenda Wright, and we'll get an update on Eagle Crest. Take a look at the weather here. It's currently 25 degrees at the Juneau Airport, and the forecast for tonight calls for patchy freezing fog after 9 p.m., partly cloudy with a low around 16 and calm wind. Tomorrow, Wednesday, patchy freezing fog before 9 a.m., sunny with a high near 30, and again, calls for calm wind. And going into Thursday, partly sunny with a high around 32 and an east wind to around 10 miles per hour. Thanks for tuning in.
Be your money, he said to his brother. Miles, Clive said softly, but with great joy, opened his arms wide. Come here and hug me, you big lug. Miles shook his head slowly from side to side. Behind him, over his shoulders, trees trembled on the hillside where the big brindled dog was charging up the mountain with the dead fish.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait.